Geekscape.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's reading is from White Power by George Lincoln Rockwell. And this is called The Black Plague. In the Congressional Record, published by the United States Government Printing Office, Proceedings of the House, 1957, page 8559, you will find the documentation of the communist plan for using the Negroes to achieve a communist victory in America. In column 1, on page 8559, you will find the following. Quote, Israel Cohen, a leading communist in England, in his A Racial Program for the 20th Century, wrote, We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tension. By propounding it into the consciousness of the dark races, that for centuries they have been oppressed by the whites, we can mould them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority against the whites, we will instill into the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the Negroes. We will aid the Negroes to rise to prominence in every walk of life, in the professions, and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America into our hands. Close quote. There you have the Jewish communist program in a nutshell. The use of the backwards, childish, and savage Negro race to destroy the white race, which stands between the Jews and their mad goal of world domination from Israel. To make a mutiny, which is what communism is, you need mobs of raging and savage people. The Jews, comprising only a fraction of 1% of the world's people, are too few to produce their own mobs, and they are too unfond of physical violence to provide any large amount of their own muscle. They need vast numbers of peanut-brained, violent, but robot-like, troops. The Negro race is perfect for the needs of the Jews in fomenting their mutiny. But before the blacks can do the Jews and Marxists any good, they must first be placed in position and conditioned. In Africa, and in the rural South, the blacks have neither the means, the spirit, nor the tools to be of service to the Jewish schemers. They are so closely akin to unthinking animals, and they are so childishly satisfied and lethargic, that there is no hope of making any successful mutiny with them. Voodoo, chicken-stealing, watermelon, razor-waving, dusky sex, singing and dancing, and other primitive pastimes keep the rural and forest Negro sufficiently satisfied, or at least unthinking about his lot, so that it is quite impossible to turn any significant number of such black men into a raging mob with any staying power for a revolution. To make a revolutionary animal of the Negro, you must first force him into a situation where he loses his normal ability to enjoy his primitive releases and pleasures, teach him to know and enjoy the luxurious pleasures and vices of urban civilization, such as heroin and white women, teach him that he has a right to those pleasures, force him into competition with white men for those pleasures, and then, when he fails, whisper to him that he is not really failing in that competition, but that white exploiters are keeping him down. The millions of primitive African blacks, brought into our big cities as voting cattle by Franklin D. Roosevelt during World War II, and by all liberal leaders since then, are incapable of competing with the white man. They cannot make it in the schools, they cannot make it in complex jobs, they cannot make it in intellectual competition. The fact that a few mixed bloods can and do make it does not disprove the fact that the mass of Negroes is congenitally incompetent and inferior, Any more than the fact that some chimpanzees can be taught to ride bicycles disproves the fact that chimpanzees aren't even as smart as the blacks. Millions and millions of these primitive misfits and incompetents are forced into urban, crowded living conditions, forced to compete with intelligent white people, forced to give up their natural pleasures in voodoo and uninhibited sex, forced to try to pretend to be what they are not, forced to fail, day after day, week after week, month after month. Finally, they get so frustrated and desperate that they are ready for any kind of violence and horror, since nothing could be much worse than the agonizing frustration they face every moment of their miserable lives. When the Jews and liberals keep harping at them, they are equal, that they have endless rights, and that they have no real duties to go with those rights, then this half-animal population of Africans trying to make it as white men goes literally crazy. It starts in the schools. The little black kid is taught in the most aggressive way that he is every bit the equal of the white kids. But the fact is that he averages 60 to 75% of the IQ of the average white kids. In the field of abstract reasoning, cold reasoning, the Negro tests even lower. As a result, the black kid can't keep up. His schoolwork is terrible. The constant comparison with the work of the white kids frustrates, angers, and upsets him all the more. In his own coloured school, this problem does not arise, but forced into competition with the whites, the Negro starts failing and suffering from the consequent humiliation, even in school. This is the cause of the Negro dropout problem, not deprivation or poverty. Literally millions of white kids are poor and oppressed and fight their way to an education, but the little Negro, understandably, doesn't have much ambition to continue in a contest that he can see from the beginning he can never win. So he drops out, or is put in a special track in the schools set up by the liberals to cover up the fact of Negro backwardness. In either case, it isn't long before he enters the competition for a good job, naturally stupid, uneducated, and naturally inept at the requirements of modern technology, the black youth finds himself on the streets and idle. Told that he has a right to all the things he sees the white man earning, fancy women, Cadillacs, and fast living, the black boy becomes filled with such a burning envy and hatred it is hard for most people to even imagine. And he turns to the only way left for him to get what he is told he deserves. Violence. He becomes a criminal. He goes out and robs, burns, rapes, loots, and finally kills. He is the classic rioter. The US Department of Justice and Labor have both published statistics on the Negro, which show that the black 10% of our population commits more than 85% of the violent crimes against people, and by far the most crimes against property. FBI Uniform Crime Reports, 1966. The jails are filled and bursting with these frustrated, violent black animals, not because we are unjust, but because Negroes cannot compete economically with white men, and crime is the only way most of them can get what they are told they deserve. The US Department of Labor has published a pamphlet called The Negro Family. It is violently pro-Negro and full of excuses for these miserable people. Certainly, it cannot be called a bigoted work. Yet here is what this booklet says on page 40 about Negro ability to compete with whites. Quote, "The ultimate mark of inadequate preparation for life is the failure rate on the armed forces' mental test. The armed forces' qualification test is not quite a mental test, nor yet an education test. It is a test of ability to perform at an acceptable level of competence. It roughly measures ability that ought to be found in an average 7th or 8th grade student. A grown young man who cannot pass this test is in trouble." 56% of Negroes fail it. This is a rate almost four times that of the whites. Close quote. Notice the last sentence in the first paragraph, that men who fail this test are in trouble. And that is the keynote of life for the young Negro. Trouble. He is constantly causing and in trouble, both as an individual and as a group, whenever the situation is ripe. Hundreds and thousands of them act in their animal-like, antisocial manner and riot. They loot, shoot, burn, kill, and beat, almost without any sense at all, just out of animal frustration and hatred of a system which keeps telling them that they are equal, while their own dim brains constantly show them that they are not only not equal, but they are so far below the white man that only by violence can they achieve anything at all. This situation is guaranteed to make bloody revolutionaries out of millions of Negroes, especially young males. They have almost nothing to lose, and everything to gain. This black army of the damned is precisely the right material for revolution. All that is needed to spark these millions of black human bombs into explosive and bloody violence on a mass scale is agitation and organisation. So, long before 1900, they were already plotting and scheming how to agitate the Negroes into massive and bloody rebellion against the whites and against the government of the United States. It wasn't really difficult. The Negroes have proven themselves, down through the ages, almost animal-like in their adaptation to all forms of manipulation and slavery. It should be remembered that most of the Negroes here in America did not get here because they were captured in Africa. No, the Arabs obtained the great majority of slaves by purchase. Their own folks sold them to the Arabs, usually for beads, salt, or trinkets, and in some cases, I think the Arabs got little for their good beads. The kind of people who would sell their own children into slavery tells much of the nature of these black men who now swarm in our streets demanding equality. But even more revealing is the fact that the early settlers in America were no fools when it came to obtaining slaves. Why do you think they went all the way over to Africa to get slaves when the woods were full of Indians? The fact is that they tried the cheaper experiment of enslaving the Indians instead of just killing them, as they finally did. But it didn't work. The Indians could not be enslaved. Think about it a moment, and you'll understand something of the nature of the Negro. Would you allow yourself to be a slave if you had all sorts of opportunity to escape from the fields, the plantation, or the cabins? Would you let somebody peddle your kids and otherwise permit what the Negro slaves permitted? You know the answer is a resounding, fighting no. Neither would the Indians. They could be chained and beaten and held, but they were far too spirited and proud to meekly follow a master around like a dog, the way millions of Negroes were taught to do. At the very first opportunity, in spite of risk, the Indian would attack, or at the very least, escape. White men, Chinese, and Indians cannot be enslaved, except in rare cases, and never as a whole race. But the Negroes do not have the get-up-and-go to resist, or even to think about it. Take care of their animal needs, give them sex satisfaction to their heart's content, and the opportunity to dance in the sun, sport like an ape in a clearing, sing and beat some kind of bongo or drum around a fire, and the pure African Negro soon settles down like a dog in a new home, provided you take care to let the Negro, like the dog, know who's boss. But just as you can take a friendly, docile dog and train him to be a vicious killer, so you can quite easily take a docile, mindless Negro and turn him into one of the most fearful murderers in all history, as is happening, especially in Africa. You make a dog vicious, as army manuals teach, by agitating him. And that's precisely how you make a Negro vicious, by agitating him. and in accordance with the plans of Israel Cohen, set forth in 1912 and printed in the Congressional Record in 1957, the Jews and Communists have been systematically agitating the Negro race in America for the past 70 years. Along with the agitation, they have been breeding him, like dogs in kennels, as fast as possible, which is pretty fast. The Negro has never been one to resist breeding as often as he could find the opportunity. Add to this the federal financial subsidization of the already powerful Negro urge to procreate, and you get a biological explosion. Negro women can actually make a living producing what can be technically and properly termed little black bastards. They are little, they are black, and they are, in the strictest sense of the word, bastards. There are already millions of these illegitimate blacks whom nobody really wants once they have been presented to get a bigger welfare check, and who are allowed to run absolutely wild in the streets. These wild black teenagers are the very guts of the riots in our big cities, and there are millions more on the way. They are very real savages, in the most blood-curdling sense of the term, even though they live in an asphalt jungle instead of in trees. They live a life of maximum violence and a total lack of any ethics at all. They fear almost nothing and respect absolutely nothing. The only possible way to deal with them, as with any dangerous savage, is to command their respect with overwhelming force. But this is precisely what our fat-headed government, manipulated by the Jews, will not use: force. Instead, we keep trying to buy off these wild animals in our streets with money. Poverty wars, art exhibits, free tickets, welfare and endless pampering. Worst of all, we keep giving them our women, foolish if well-meaning girls whose maternal instincts have been perverted from loving and nurturing their own kind to loving and nurturing these little black vipers in their nests because, they believe, the blacks are helpless and persecuted and misunderstood. Sooner or later, these women get a rude awakening when the black viper shows its fangs. But until that time, talking to these fanatical women is like trying to talk a queer out of his perversion. The result of all this is a swarming army of black mutineers in our midst. They are rapidly getting trained and armed for terrorism right before our eyes and with maximum arrogance. The Black Panthers, the Deacons for Defence, and a dozen other black Mau Mau groups are formed and training with guns, Molotov cocktails and grenades, even as you hear this. The Panthers recently had the gall to march into the California legislature in uniform, heavily armed with automatic weapons, and nobody did anything. Meanwhile, the Jews are howling to disarm the whites and the law-abiding people. They want gun control laws, although it is obvious that this won't do a bit of good with criminals and revolutionaries who have illegal guns. How obvious can it get? What the Jews have done over the past 50 or 60 years is first to promote vast migrations to the cities of the black bodies they need as voting blocks to keep the likes of Franklin D. Roosevelt in power. Then they started working to breed these blacks on a scale never before seen in human affairs with what they call welfare. Finally, they have agitated these blacks ceaselessly with rights lies, filling their dim African brains with the wildest dreams of Cadillacs, white women, cash, luxury and ease, all things the black masses can never earn in this society, simply because they don't have the native ability. The Jews have made it almost a crime even to think this fact, however, so that everything these benighted black people hear convinces millions of jungle-minded blacks that they have practically built America with their sweat, while we white people have driven them with whips and lain around on silk pillows, enjoying their hard-earned wealth. The fact that our people realized, organized, and created all the natural wealth, the same wealth they ignored in Africa for millions of years, escapes them. Horses, too, sweated to create American wealth, but horses cannot claim credit for that wealth. This fact is taken as an insult by these arrogant chimpanzees, posing as civil rights leaders whenever I mention it in college speeches. That is exactly what is going on with the childlike race of blacks in America. Devilish Jewish, Marxist, and liberal agitators, sensing the ideal mutineers for their army for the overthrow of civilization, have moved the blacks into the most dangerous possible positions in the middle of our technological civilization, bred them into a swarming, exploding mass, and then agitated them beyond all endurance. The result will not be long in coming. In fact, it is already here, with sporadic riots which will soon spread, and then merge into one nightmare of terror, bloodshed, and jungle madness. But it is not only a local American problem. This explosion of the inferior, fostered by and led by the Marxists and the Jews with their liberal toadies, is a growing worldwide problem, which cannot remain unsolved for much longer. The Jews have crushed the truth about human breeds and convinced much of the white world that the developed white nations owe endless aid to the undeveloped black nations. This utterly insane lie, spread all over the earth, has produced a devil's miracle. It has sent doctors, medical care, schools, money, machines, and technology to the most animalistic populations of backwards Africa, to India, and to every place where inferior humanity has previously been limited in its numbers by its own stupidity and ignorance since the beginning of time. But since coloured people are all supposed to be equals, the equalist fanatics have followed through in the attempt to make them equal by pulling them up with modern medicine and science. This has taken all limits off the breeding of these people, and the result is a world plague, a black plague. Egotistical, short-sighted men have presumed to outwit nature, and nature will teach them a terrible, bloody lesson. Anybody knows that the reason you can't sell snow to Eskimos is that they already have all the snow they are likely to need for the next few thousand years. You can't sell mosquitoes to folks who live in tropical swamps either. Whenever the supply of anything far exceeds the need, that thing becomes valueless. On the other hand, the superabundant air around us, which you couldn't sell in its usual form to anyone for a nickel, suddenly becomes the most precious thing in the world to a drowning man. There is no way to get around this law of supply and demand. Whatever is so superabundant as to be a drug on the market becomes worthless, no matter how you try to prop up its value. Whatever is desperately needed, regardless of pretenses, will become valuable. All of this is preface to a fact that should have become glaringly obvious years ago, but is still somewhat hidden from normal view by a million pretenses. That fact is the growing worthlessness of millions of human beings. The situation with humanity is very much like the situation with diamonds. Diamonds are now very valuable. The reason is not purely that they are handsome. Fake diamonds can be made so close in appearance to the real ones that only experts with a magnifying glass can tell the difference. No, it is a rarity almost alone that gives diamonds their real value. Except for in industry. Imagine what diamonds would be worth if there were some kind of strange event in space and billions of diamonds showered down on the Earth for several months until we were almost smothered in diamonds, knee-deep in diamonds. Overnight, you couldn't get a nickel for a diamond. Not only that, but people would pay to get them shoveled off their property. And if the showers were painful and broke up property and hurt people, diamonds would be among the most hated things on this earth. That is precisely what is ahead with Negroes and most coloured people. Indeed, with inferior people. We have produced a plague of niggers.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.